Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. And this week, we're going to be discussing Tom Cruise. Is he really a star? We don't know. And we're also going to talk about possibly impossible missions, but we're actually not going to reference Mission Impossible. It's going to be fun. Without further ado, let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today, hello, is Johnny Davenport.
Hey guys, y'all miss me?
No.
Fine.
I missed you.
It. Were you gone? Where you been?
Well, let's see. I had to go and deal with some.
You misunderstood like I cared. And also joining us is Amanda Sink.
Hey. So John, what were you saying? I feel bad. He was in the middle of talking.
So what I was saying
that you're going to continue.
We can play this game this entire time if you want.
Yeah. Please tell everybody. I know we're dying to know. Where you been the last couple weeks besides not here?
I was out, went with an impromptu vacation with my wife.
Oh, that's probably pretty fun.
I mean, I was drunk a lot, so yeah.
No, I meant the being with your wife part, not you, actually.
Well, no, nobody has fun with me.
is going to get sad really
this
fast.
This is just so uncomfortable. All right. Well, I do want to say that thank you, everybody, for listening and all the votes you did for the podcast awards. We'll find out pretty soon if we made the finals, but we are going to launch right into our movie and TV discussion. We got a cool show. I think this is going to be fun. Even though there's a lot of Mission Impossible references, it's not all about Mission Impossible, and I can't wait to debate the almighty Tom Cruise.
Oh, boy.
Because for a long time, Amanda has held her personal mandate, which she hasn't been officially part of the show very long, but in private, she has had a less than stellar appreciation for the cruise.
So I have feelings.
We're going to put it on cruise control.
Was it private?
What's that?
Was it really private?
Well, it was unless you've personally talked to her, yeah.
I think I've only mentioned it like once on the other episode.
We're going to discuss that. So you hold tight. You'll get your chance to be wrong.
I'm pretty sure she's put it on Front Street every chance she's gotten, everywhere, whether it's on the internet, she put them on blast on Twitter, I'm sure. I'm sure there's an Instagram photo with her like hanging an effigy of him someplace. I'm sure that's happened.
I feel like this is getting a lot more dramatic than I actually am, but you've given me great ideas. Thank you.
Wow. Well, we're going to defend the man because we can appreciate his greatness and the running skills that he has. But before we get there, apparently they're working on a Jack Bauer series that focuses on his origins. I don't want to get into another 24, or should they, shouldn't they? Because they shouldn't. They should just leave it alone if Kiefer's not involved. But that's up for debate, just not with me. I want to open this up and ask the question, take your favorite series, whatever your favorite TV series, where the characters are still alive, so it's possible. You know, so if you're a big I Love Lucy fan, that's not really going to apply. And tell me, wow, really, we're going to cry?
I Love Lucy.
Yeah, but she's not alive.
I know.
Okay, so you take your favorite series.
Why did you whisper it like it's a secret?
I didn't know if everybody knew. Somebody might be like, Lucille Ball is dead. Oh, my God.
I've been watching those reruns like they were new episodes.
You've got some explaining to do. Do you, you're welcome. Do you prefer the origin story of your favorite show that's no longer on the air, or the prequel continuation, or this current trend of bringing back the original cast for a new iteration? Like, I think they're even talking about it for Frasier. They're talking about it for a bunch of shows now. Where do you land on this idea?
It really depends on the show itself. For me, my favorite is going to be Buffy. That's the one I'm going to throw into the ring. And as we know, I have feelings on Buffy coming back. So
No, not as we know. Only if you listen to last week's episode.
Okay, so if you listen to last week's episode, then you know that I have feelings on this subject matter.
Are there people who didn't listen to last week's episode?
Yeah, I'm sure there are. You probably.
You.
No, he listened. He actually reflected upon it.
Oh. Right. Look at you. I did. You're probably drunk. You didn't know what else to do or something.
Anyway, what's your point?
I don't have friends. One?
My point is basically just that I feel like each show should be taken individually, but there is a weird trend with rebooting shows and reviving shows that need to be left alone or don't have any purpose in being brought back, or it just hasn't been long enough for that to happen. You can't just blanket statement for everything. And I know that's what you're wanting is like in general, which I prefer, but
if you have to pick one, do you want to go origin story or new or the old cast come back and do a later version?
Maybe you should pull a Jack Bauer tire to a chair and shoot her in the kneecap. That'll get her to answer the question right.
Right?
Given those circumstances, I would probably say bring back the original cast because I wouldn't want someone else to portray it in the original, you know, doing an origin story. I don't know how I'd feel about that.
Well, if your favorite's Buffy, so she starts as a teenager. What, are they going to go back to daycare?
Maybe.
That would actually be kind of amazing.
They could expand on...
It's like Muppet Babies with Buffy.
They talk about her old school and she got kicked out of that school and she burned it down. They could go through that storyline, but you already know where it ends.
That's one season.
Yeah. So you have that. But I don't know. I don't think origin stories are always necessary. And a lot of the shows that we enjoy, they already incorporate that into it. If they wanted it in there, it would have been in there.
Well, in the case of Jack Bauer, we don't know how Jack Bauer became the insanely psychotic badass he was. We just don't know. When he starts off, he looks like a mild-mannered dad. And then and the series ends, he's like, you know, get away from my Harley.
So take your favorite show then, John. Take your favorite show. How would you prefer to do it?
Currently, the one show that I would like to see come back in some sort of form or another would be Stargate Universe. However, the way they left that show off, they can very easily bring it back, bring back some of the cast, leave some of the cast behind, and change out the cast for other people the way they ended it. I'm fine with that. But for other series, it really depends on what the series is. If you're dealing with like Magnum PI, I'm okay with them completely rebooting it. My problem with the idea of doing something like, let's get Jack Bauer's backstory, is that's not really a story I want to see. I don't want to see Jack Bauer become a psychopath. I don't need it. I don't.
Oh, and American hero. Not a psych. American hero.
He saved. Tomato.
He saved America with a conscience. He cared.
Did he?
Yeah, he saved America and his daughter from a cougar, which I think is a euphemism somewhere. I don't know.
It might be somewhere. But I still don't need to see that story. But my other problem with the idea of an origin story is that you immediately get robbed of any sort of suspense as to what's going to happen to that main character because we know where he ends up.
Absolutely. And I also, I agree with everything John's saying, but if they wanted it in the original script, they would have told us. Sometimes that's why we like the characters that we like, is because we don't know why they are the way they are. We just appreciate where they are and where they're going and where they end up in that story.
I always want the original cast. I mean, that's who you fall in love with. If you're going to do it, I want to see the Psych is one I want to see come back. I mean, obviously they made a movie. I wanted to make more. If you went back, let's tell Sean and Gus's story. Well, I already got that in snippets from the series, but I definitely don't want to watch that show. I don't care. If a James Rhodey and Dulé Hill's not there, just wrap it up.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a line where we stop showing up for the show itself when we start showing up for only the characters. And we don't give a shit what happens to the story as long as we get to hang out with Sean and Gus, or we get to hang out with the cast of the Destiny, or, you know, or Buffy is like braiding our hair or some crap like that.
Well, I gotta say, I'm with you. I don't want Jack Bauer's origin story only because Kiefer definitely can't play it. And I don't want to watch it if it's not Kiefer Sutherland. There's just a few people in the world that I think are iconic with their character, and that's one of them. I think every 24 fan wants that show back. Bring Jack Bauer himself back, and we're in. But that's it.
Mm-hmm. I think Kiefer's a little tired to do that show.
You know what? You need to shut your mouth. Because that is unacceptable. Well, he is always welcome.
Isn't he free?
He's
right
not
now?
Tom Cruise.
He is free right now. Thanks for bringing it up.
Sorry, I don't mean to like put some salt in those wounds.
I like Survivor. You know,
but sorry.
I would love to see. You know what? Do some kind of a crossover. Designated Survivor. He got kicked out of office, and then he went back to being Jack Bauer and kills everybody who opposed him.
That would be kind of cool. I'd watch that
for America.
You know what? America. 24 the musical.
I'm in. I don't know why. I mean, he's kind of a musician. I've seen him sing. He's all right. So I'd watch it. Jack Bauer shoots somebody and then, hello, I'll miss you.
Imagine it more like Batman's song from the Lego movie, like, dead parents.
Probably definitely a little heavier. Yeah. All right. So here's what we're going to do, okay? Because entertainment news is, we covered so much of it last week, and it has been up and down, and there's a lot of negativity, and we ain't going to cover that because we're sick of it. So let's get light. Give us the happiest news story in entertainment you've read over the past week since the last show that we did that John didn't bother showing up for. John, what is the happiest news you've seen in the past week?
You mean besides the fact that I didn't show up for the last show?
Yeah, outside of that.
Well, the happiest thing I've seen is that Kevin Smith, who is somebody that I from Hollywood that I absolutely adore, despite some of the things that he goes on and on about, I still find reasons to adore everything about him. He recently announced that he was able to finish and turn in the biggest IP, intellectual property that he's been able to be a part of. Ever. So I think that's really amazing. I think it's really great. For a long time now, for the last 2 years, he's been directing episodes of the WB shows like Flash and Supergirl. And now it looks like he's transitioning back into doing something with movies. And he might have let it slip that it had something to do with Disney. So my question to you guys is this. Did you ever think a heart attack would help you refocus your life?
I don't think it changes his recent works because he's not been good for a while as a director and he hasn't been writing as sharply. I mean, people keep saying, well, he did good on Flash and he did that. Yeah, but those are pretty much, I mean, they're well-oiled machines. He just has to show up and do his thing and leave. It's the same thing every single week. He hasn't made a good movie in a long time. Red State was the last one. So it doesn't make me excited, but it makes me hopeful. If he writes something really cool and cuts out the weed jokes and cuts out the sex jokes, and yeah, I'd like to see him try something mainstream, sure.
Yeah, well, I'd like to see him do it too. How about you, Amanda?
Disney is, I feel like that's a pretty well-oiled machine too. So in comparison, if it happens to be something with Disney, I'm sure it'll be good, and I think he would actually take it seriously and put the amount of effort in that it requires for something that's that big of a production. But I also feel like for him, he did a lot of movies that he had fun with. I don't think, like, Yoga Hoosers, John, you had put in the Facebook group about his panel, and if you watch the panel, he talks briefly for a few seconds, like, if I die, the last movie that I have is that, and that's not how I'm going to go out. Like, that was just fun. I need to do something more. So I think he really does have the intentions of taking whatever property he's working on and doing something very serious with it. And I can't imagine that anyone who experiences a near-death situation that their perspectives would not change. It would be kind of more alarming to me if they stayed the same because they're like, dude, my whole life is here. I'm just kind of watching it flash before my eyes and there's things that I still want to do. So that can probably, I don't know, drive that creativity that maybe he was losing for a little while or that motivation. I don't know. I am interested and I'm intrigued and I'm excited.
I'm just on the bandwagon that I'm kind of tired of pulling for Kevin Smith. A, I'm tired of hearing him tell me how, you know, just everything in his life. I mean, he's like a teenager sometimes where he posts everything on social media. But it's also the, okay, I've supported you your entire career. Stop doing stuff like Yoga Hoosers. Stop getting high all the time. Stop just being an adult. Maybe this will refocus him. I don't know. I just want to see it. I want to see proof. I'm hopeful that he gets back on track because he's been off the rails for a couple of years.
I think there's a slight adjustment in his personality right now, which it seems like, yeah, there was a lot of like self-deprecating humor going on, a lot of things where he pointed out that up until just before the heart attack, he would say there's no way he would ever work on something that's Disney oriented or DC oriented because he is just not that good enough. He's the first person to say that. I'll be the second. Well, that's fine. You can be the second all you want. I think now it's possible that he wants to see himself in that other light. I think he is refocused and it's not that he doesn't have the ability of doing it. He has a strong, let's just say it is Disney and let's just say it might be comic related or Marvel related.
It's not. I think he did shoot that down. I think he said it's not Marvel or Star Wars or anything like that. I believe he followed that up.
Oh, did he? Okay.
I believe so. Don't quote me because I could totally be making that up and you wouldn't know.
Well, I wouldn't know. But anyhow, if you look at as far as his writing credentials for comics themselves, so if you look at like Jeff Johns and other people who've transitioned into movies and been able to find success with that, he's got the same kind of backbone with him when it comes to his comic writing. He's done several Batman series where I think the one complaint that people had with him on Batman was he made Batman piss himself at one point. The other thing is that he's done his Green Arrow. He's done Spider-Man. He's done and Daredevil. So he's got a lot going for him, I think, in the comic realm, if that turns out to be it.
All right, well, we'll see what happens with old Kev, and hopefully you guys are right. Hopefully he does comes out of the last couple of years of where he's been career-wise, because he definitely had the talent for years, and it just kind of seemed like it fell by the wayside for weed, I guess. Do you blame the weed, John? Because that's what I blame.
I it's one of the reasons why I can't stand Seth Rogen.
Wait, what's that? Oh, because the weed just corrupts the creativity, or what?
I get a little tired of people who are like, dude, weed. Yeah, I get it, dude. Shut up. We don't need to hear about it every 5 freaking minutes. And the reason why I blame Seth Rogen is because up until he directed, Max and Mira Make a Porno?
Zach and Mira Make a Porno.
Zach and Mira Make a Porno. Up until the point Kevin Smith directed that with Seth, like, he wasn't really a heavy partaker of the herb. So Seth Rogen, like,
forced him.
He didn't force him, but he kind of opened the door for him. And pretty much at the exact same time, I think that's when Kevin had problems with his dad. His dad had passed away around the same time. And that's when he just kind of threw himself into that habit. At least that's what it looks like from the observer's point of view.
Wow. So you opened that door and just a cloud of despair came into the room. That's what I'm getting. A cloud of weed and despair. Came into the room.
Yeah, pretty much.
I gotcha.
Pretty much.
Well, my happy news is Star Wars Episode 9 will begin filming at London's Pinewood Studios on August 1st. J.J. Abrams does return to direct the installment, and he co-wrote it with Chris Terrio, who also did Argo. The bigger story here is the new and returning cast. We've got Billy Dee Williams, the iconic Lando Calrissian. Mark Hamill has gone public that he'll be in the movie in some, probably as Space Ghost. Anthony Daniels will be there, and the late Carrie Fisher. And I want to read the quote. We desperately love Carrie Fisher. This is from JJ. Finding a truly satisfying conclusion to the Skywalker saga without her eluded us. We were never going to recast or use a CG character like in Rogue One. With the support and blessing from her daughter, Billy, we have found a way to honor Carrie's legacy and role as Leia in Episode 9 by using unseen footage we shot together in Episode 7. So you're getting Leia. Her arc will be complete in some form. And it will actually be Carrie Fisher and not some creepy as hell CGI model.
That's awesome.
I think that's awesome.
It is.
Definitely. That is awesome too. Yeah.
Well, and
that's my happiness. And no, it's definitely not MoviePass is doing well because that would be so not true. I'm so glad I've touted them for years. Thanks for making me look like a bag of assholes.
Well, you were fine until they decided to drop their price. So when they were $30 a month, $40 a month. I mean, they probably would have been able to sustain themselves if they would have just left their planet.
Yeah, now they dropped it, and they're raising it, and they're not letting you have movies.
Now they're cutting off most of the movies.
People are moving towns so they can get closer to AMC for A-list. It's just insane. But anyway, I'm sorry. Carrie Fisher, what were you saying, Amanda?
I was just going to say it is really cool, though, that they worked with her family and that the family worked with them as well. I feel like that shows that they're genuinely trying to honor her memory and her character in the franchise, which, you know, touches your heart a little bit.
If I had one.
If you had one. Yeah.
I gave it to MoviePass. They stomped all over it. But hey, we got Carrie Fisher. So now we come to Amanda. Amanda, what is your happy news
Yay.
Of the week? And I'm sorry, I kind of feel bad because I was kind of negative to John. John, I am very excited for your news. I hope it works out. I am pulling. I'm going to be the first one in the theater to see whatever it is. Just for you, I'm going to do that.
You sure you don't want to just pull a movie pass and shoot it dead right in front of me?
Well, I mean, I probably won't be able to see it the first weekend because it'll be blacked out. But I'll definitely go by week 4. So, Amanda, what's your happy news?
My happy news is that Chris Hardwick is returning to The Talking Dead on August 12th. I have no idea when the podcast ID10T is going to be coming back. I wish I had some news on that for everyone, but I will anxiously await my feed to be refreshed and to hear about the Talking with Chris Hardwick show that was supposed to premiere on June 16th, which was my birthday weekend. So thanks for that.
My birthday.
His last episode did come out on my birthday, so at least I had that. But I'm anxious to see what they're going to do with all of the work that he had done, because they had podcasts that I know he would have pre-recorded, and they had work for talking with Chris Hardwick.
A lot of that was advertising and actors plugging their movies that came out around that time, right? So yeah. it's going to be kind of hard to...
Are they going to still give that content, or are they just going to... I mean, that's kind of a shrug for those actors.
I have a feeling they are going to take their time and see how this pans out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that they'll probably see how the Talking Dead goes before they release Talking with Chris Hardwick, you know, on the air for the second season.
But you're fans, you're just happy to see
that. So I'm just excited to see, you know, I also want to, and I'm not going in depth with the situation, but I do want to say that I respect AMC for actually doing an in-depth investigation and hiring a third party source to investigate it before they made a decision one way or the other and then came to that decision and decided to, you know, bring him back on. So, yay. Oh, and what's her name? Yvette Brown? Is that her name?
Yeah, Yvette Nicole Brown.
Yeah, she's still going to be doing an interim hosting of the August 5th episode for Talking Dead. And she'll still be a guest host on
Yeah, she's going to be the emergency seat. She's going to be the emergency glass. In case of emergency, break open glass.
Yeah. So,
in case Chris Hardwick goes, okay, you know what? I'm out.
Or somebody tweets anything. I mean, they're going to be watching everything that revolves around that show.
Yeah.
For good reason. For good reason.
Yeah.
Got to keep an eye on it. That's good. I mean, for fans, that's good. I know there's still some people not so happy, but hey, can't make everybody happy. They got to do something.
True. But I mean, they did an investigation, so you know
what?
Respect
the court of public opinion has gotten a little crazy. And there's actually speculation that Disney might be taking a meeting with James Gunn. It's a rumor. We don't normally do rumor, but when there's a lot of rumors flying around and it's by reputable sources, we'll mention it. There's rumors that Disney's going to take a meeting with James Gunn and see about bringing him back to Guardians.
Dun, 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 dun.
Drama. So we'll see what happens with that. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com, join our Facebook group, or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Now we go to a second take. This is a little bit where we're going to start introducing every now and again, where we have an actor or a property that there might be a little bit of a difference of opinion. So we get a second take on it. This one is going to be about Tom Cruise, Mr. Tom Cruise. Now, let me give you a quick backdrop on Mr. Tom Cruise. He's 56 years old. He's been a star since the 80s, since before Amanda was born. But hey, let's go ahead and pile on to the guy who's been a star since before you were even born. And while his fame has faded a little bit after a little over 10 years after hopping on a couch, that kind of brought him down a little bit, there's no denying that he still draws in crowds worldwide. He's still a worldwide sensation. There's also no denying that the world is kind of split on him these days. He does have his detractors. So, Amanda, you're not a fan of Tom Cruise, the actor and megastar. So we're going to discuss it. You tell us why you feel so strongly about the Cruise, and then John and I are going to weigh in on what it is about Cruise that still draws us back to his movies. And then we'll see where you end up. Maybe we can change your mind. Maybe you can change ours. I don't know. But tell us why you don't like Tom Cruise, and be nice about it, because he would be.
Yeah, I'm sure. So
use all your thetans.
Let's... That's funny. Good. Good on you, Scientology. I'll start with the fact that I do thoroughly respect Tom Cruise as a stunt performer. I think he is probably one of the greatest stunt performers that we have. He's also a little ridiculous, and they give him a lot of leniency. I cannot imagine how his contract must be written up. But he's a great stunt performer. With that said, that does not automatically make him a great actor. And I feel like this is where I have a great difference of opinion from a lot of people, because I see it as they're two separate entities. You have your stunts, just like we have separate stunts people, and then you have your acting. And his acting abilities, they're mediocre, they're fine, but he's never made me cry. And I cry at everything. And when I say everything, I cried twice in Equalizer 2, guys. Like, I cry in everything. And he doesn't bring that emotion to me, and it's very rare that something doesn't. And I just feel like he's just being himself. He's fun on the screen. Don't get me wrong. He is fun, but he's not this world's greatest actor, in my opinion. I feel like he's an all right actor with really great stunts, and he gets recognized for those performances, which also takes away jobs from stunt performers, but you know, who's counting that? So I just feel
insurance providers, probably.
That's true. But I just feel like there's we don't have that same respect for other stunt performers that aren't attached to Tom Cruise's name. You know what I mean? Like, we don't look at the credits and say, wow, I recognize that person. That person is so great. They've done so many things and they've risked their lives. It's just because Tom Cruise's face is attached to this and he does the stunts himself, which is great. You know, that's really cool. But I just don't feel like that makes him an actor. And that's just the Hollywood side of things for me.
Yeah, personal shouldn't weigh in here because we're talking about entertainment and movies, right?
I'm okay. Keeping the personal stuff separate.
But do you?
What?
When you see his movies, yeah. Do you keep it separate?
Do, like, can I watch a movie and not think about whatever
the Scientology or whatever?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I don't respect that, but, I mean, like, Scientology is a demon in and of itself. But anyway, so his personal religion cult aside, I'm still able to sit and watch a movie and say, this is a movie, this is his performance, this, and like in the last Mission Impossible, he was fine in it. Like, I don't have a problem with that. It's just that he doesn't overwhelm me, and I feel like it's just very overrated. Like, I would easily compare him to Miles Teller for you, Aaron. So,
what?
Overrated. I'm not saying that their performances are identical, but you have actors that Hollywood is trying to make this huge thing. And I'm not saying that Tom Cruise has never been good, but he's nothing that's like, wow, what an in-depth performance. It's wow, he can run really, really fast and he can do really cool stunts, which makes him a great stunt performer, not a great actor.
All right. You've had your say, John.
All right. You guys go.
You have the floor.
There's so much to unpack with that. I mean, she says that her emotions aren't part of this, but her tone would actually argue that her emotions have something to do with it. Can Tom Cruise act? I think the 90s proves that he can. He did several movies that show that he could. Born on the 4th of July, A Few Good Men. I'm sure there are some others that I can't think of right now. He is a good actor. I think right now what we're dealing with is an actor who is doing movies from time to time to have a great time and have fun and just show up because that's what he kind of wants to do. I think right now we're seeing him kind of in his Denzel Washington stage. It's more or less the same character in every single movie, but it doesn't take away from the fact that he's fun, he's entertaining, and he shows up and he does the work. He is there to make a movie. He's there to decide what needs to be done. And what I find a lot of times that I get distracted by how intensely focused he is in the role that he's doing. It comes through in his acting and it almost overpowers his acting, but he still has some charm to him. He still has the ability to make you smile. He still has the ability to crack wise. Now he's added this whole thing into a lot of his roles where he's adding in, hey, by the way, I'm 56 and I don't have any business doing this stuff. There's all these little nods whenever he's doing something where he has to stop and be like, really? We're going to keep going? I think that saying he's just a stunt performer is robbing him from everything that's come from him, from the aughts, from the 90s, from the 80s, everything. You're robbing him of everything he's done. Sure, in the last 10 to 15 years, he's been doing nothing but fun and exciting movies. But he kind of earned that right at the moment, just like Denzel did.
Man, he took some of my thunder, so I'll throw in some of mine. I got to address Miles Teller, okay? Because I get what you're saying, but it's not even close. Miles Teller has never been when I say, and I always say this, Hollywood stopped trying to make Miles Teller happen, it's because he's never been the lead in a successful box office hit, ever. Look at his career. Even Whiplash, which he wasn't the lead, I don't care what they said on the box, he wasn't the lead of that movie, still not a hit. He is not a box office performer. Tom Cruise, on the other hand, $3.8 billion domestic, $9.5 billion worldwide in his career. One of the biggest actors, not just of a decade, of all time. That's the world saying, we like Tom Cruise quite a bit. We're big fans of the Cruise. We're on Cruise control. He's just had a decade where he went a little off the rails hopping on a couch, and I think ever since then he kind of buried himself on a personal level. But in terms of movies, there are very few actors that I would say put as much work into what he does as he does. There, in terms of he's tireless at promoting, he's tireless at doing whatever he can to make audiences happy. His career has been in a variety of films. I feel kind of like John does in the stuntman equation. I mean, I kind of get it if you really just follow him for the last decade, because he has been doing a lot of fun movies. Edge of Tomorrow, though, I would say is a really, really smart film.
It's yeah.
Oblivion, mm-hmm. smart film. Those aren't mm-hmm. action opuses. Those are science fiction pieces with action bits, but man, they've got so much more to them. And then you look at his repertoire, his career. Mission Impossible is just a little bit. And the first Mission Impossible is not really an action movie. It's more of a thriller. Top Gun, Rain Man, Oscar winner, Rain Man, A Few Good Men, Tropic Thunder. If you say the man can't act, go watch Tropic Thunder. That man put it all out there. And what was the one with Philip Seymour Hoffman? I can't remember, where he's like, respect the beep. What was that? Everybody listening knows the movie I'm talking about. But then you have Jerry Maguire. Jerry Maguire was a great performance. You Complete Me. It's just, I think he has gotten into a rut where he's trying to prove he's not 56 years old. And that's why maybe in the last 10 years you're seeing, and also I think he's trying to win back people that might have left him because of some of his choices on a more personal level. So he's doing more entertaining, fun action movies as opposed to taking chances like he used to do. The Firm. Firm's a great movie, and he's a great actor in it. He goes up against Hackman. He's going up against quality actors his entire career. His co-stars constantly speak highly of him. He loves movie. Whenever I watch him, either in a making of or in an interview, he loves movies as much as us listening to these podcasts love movies. He wants nothing more than to watch a great movie and to make you feel like you're watching a great movie. That is not a Miles Teller. Miles Teller just wants to get rich. Tom Cruise wants to make you happy. That's all he cares about. And I mean, I will say he hasn't challenged himself much in the last few years, but he's earned that right. Just like Denzel. Denzel's the same guy in every movie for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. The same guy.
He's same guy. He shows up. He's the wise, kick-ass black guy. That's all he has to do.
Yep. And I wouldn't even throw him black guy. He's just the wise, kick-ass guy.
He's also a lot more impactful. In terms of Tom Cruise's old catalog, yes, a lot of those are really great movies. But almost all of those, I could easily replace him out of it, and I would still enjoy the movie, if not more, with somebody else in that role.
Then I would think that is a personal thing, because Tom Cruise...
All of this is a personal thing. You guys enjoying Tom Cruise and me not enjoying Tom Cruise is all a personal thing. My point is, I think if you separated the fun aspect, the aspects where he's so much fun because he likes to do all this stuff. And he does have a good, like, enthusiasm. You know, I will definitely give him that he has a good enthusiasm and that he enjoys doing what he does. But he also bases himself on the stunt performances because his old catalog, none of those movies have ever emotionally impacted me. They have never made me go, wow, that was great. The movies are great, but that's not always attributed to him. Very rarely, in my opinion, is it attributed to his acting. He's a joy to see in interviews, like, for sure. He's got a lot of that energy that you want to see. He makes you feel more positive because he has that energy. But that doesn't automatically make you a good actor because you're in good movies. He definitely brings money to the box office because he's fun, but that doesn't mean he's a great actor.
It's not just because he's fun. A Few Good Men, there's a moment of greatness in that courtroom that no other actor, I would say, any time in history could replicate, when he's going up against Jack Nicholson, arguably one of the greatest actors of all time, without a doubt, and there'd be very few people that could dispute that, where he's going back and forth, and he realizes he got him, and his stunned response is so impeccable, I don't think any other actor could replicate that. That, just because he doesn't challenge himself as much recently, doesn't mean that he hasn't in the past.
And
he
has in the past. And I would argue his past.
Okay. Well, we would agree to disagree, because I think he can be a great actor when he wants to be. And Tropic Thunder, I'm just saying, how far outside the box you need to get.
Well, Tropic Thunder was pretty great. Valkyrie was really awesome. And that's actually a World War II movie. American Made, did anyone get to see that one?
Yeah, it was good. I didn't love that one, but he was trying to do a little bit more acting as opposed to what he has done in the last years. But I will say, That was more Tom Cruise, the movie star, as opposed to Tom Cruise stretching. And that's kind of what Amanda, I do agree the last 10 years, he has been the same guy in every movie. I just think he had a career before that that unfortunately the last 10 years might cause some to overlook more.
I mean, I that's on them if they only look at 10 years. I personally, I've looked at his entire, I mean, I don't want to say I've watched his entire catalog, but I take into account not just the 10 years that you're referencing, but the major works of him that go back into the 80s.
Have you seen Born on the 4th of July?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Watch that one. Tell Missing me he out. Can't act. I would say that. No, I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, I agree he hasn't shown much the last couple of years, but he's got it. He's just so desperate to recapture that glimmer of hope, I guess. Tommy Cruise. John, anything you want to add? I'm sorry, man, and I've been talking, so owning the time.
I think you guys covered it all. I mean, I understand Amanda's point, but at the same time, I still look at the man as a whole, and with the Scientology stuff, I don't even hold that against him anymore, because who am I to tell him what he's doing, whether or not it's right or wrong? It's his life. I can't jump on him for that. It sounds silly, maybe, but it's not the way I'm going to live my life. So I don't care.
I will say, maybe, Tom, if you're listening, stop doing stunts. You're 56. You just broke an ankle. You shut production down for 8 weeks. So maybe, you know, that's why you've got old Billy or some whatever his name is in the back that's willing to jump that fence for you. So just let him have a go at it. All right. Before we move on, I wanted to take a second and say thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. There are bonus episodes there. We have our monthly bonus episode and a bad movie night, which is going to be XXX, The Return of Xander Cage. So look forward to that. And I'm kind of curious. You guys go in the Facebook group or on Twitter or even email and just let us know where you stand on the cruise. Give us your opinion across the board. We want to hear them. All right, now I've got spoiler-free reviews. We've got three of them. Number one is Extinction from Netflix. Amanda, lead John into this puppy.
Boy, oh boy.
Are you going to yell at me?
Extinction is a father has a reoccurring dream of losing his family, but his nightmare turns into a reality when the planet is invaded by a force bent on destruction. Fighting for their lives, he comes to realize an unknown strength to keep them safe from harm. Now, John, you saw this one on Netflix. Is it the same movie we've seen 100 times, or is there anything unique about it?
There is something actually unique, and that's actually what's actually interesting is that I in the first 45 minutes, give or take, in the movie, I was irritated by how same the movie was. It's almost distracting how same the movie was. But then when it does have its unique element come in, it makes you reflect on everything you just saw, and it shows you and it teaches you that it's not what you thought you were dealing with this entire time. And it really changes the entire outlook of the movie. So it's almost like I was looking at everything through my right eye, and then I closed my right eye and looked at everything through my left eye, and it was a completely different show. It was really interesting to see the switch.
Was it like Nick Fury, where one eye you didn't see out of?
Well, yeah. I mean, I could only I can kind of feel out the panels on my right. Yeah, that sort of thing.
How do you feel about Michael Pena? Is that how you say his name?
Pena.
Pena. Pena. However you say it. Yeah, Pena. John, you say it. You're Spanish.
Luis. All right.
How was he? Because he's in this is a more serious role for him, right? So how did he stack up?
Well, you know what? Saying that this is a more serious role for him is a little unfair, because Michael Pena has done a lot of serious roles over the years, and they get overlooked because he is so charming and so fun in some of the comedies he has. More recently, Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I think there was one where he's a security guard with Seth Rogen. he was actually the kind of the best part of that movie. And in this, he's really great too. And especially when you see the twist, because at first, again, you get distracted by what's going on. But he's playing it perfectly. He's playing it very clean, very to the point. And it's very interesting to see him play this role that's a lot more toned down than anything than some of his funnier stuff.
Well, that's a good vote of confidence there. So I've heard a lot of, it seems to be a very divisive flick from what I've seen online and people reviewing it. Is it worth the criticisms that it's gotten overall?
Well, like I said, 40 minutes into it, I thought I was watching a clone of something else. And if it wasn't for the fact that I was paying attention after that point, I probably would have really rated this pretty low as well. And I think that's where the divisive line falls, where you are going along and you think you're seeing one movie and the twist happens, but you're so tired of the fact that you've already seen this movie before that you don't notice the twist, or it doesn't have that sort of same sort of effect on you where you're kind of, where you probably just stop and like, oh my God, are you freaking kidding me? But if you're more open and more receptive to the idea, then you're like, eh, it's a good time. And I think a lot of people that I've run into online, more people have appreciated the movie than not appreciated it.
Okay. Well, if the full price of admission were $10, what would you give it?
I gave it 7.
Wow. Pretty decent.
You really liked Extinction.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I even with, like, as much as I'm pointing out, like, the first 40 minutes, I'm like, oh my God, what movie am I watching here? Where's Tom Cruise and War of the Worlds? Where's Skyline? It's, you know, as much as I spent that first part doing that, the idea of where I can stop and think and reflect on the movie for a day or two, I think is really cool. The fact that it made me want to do that, I think is really cool.
Definitely.
Now we move on to Castle Rock.
So,
Hulu.
Yeah.
It's on Hulu.
Is it on the Hulu, Aaron?
It's on the Hulu every Wednesday, but the first 3 episodes have dropped.
All right. So by the time some of you will listen to this, it would be to the 4th episode, maybe. Who knows? Anyhow, Aaron did see it. And to give you guys an idea of what Castle Rock is, this is going to take the world of Stephen King's novels and it slams them together into one sort of world that kind of intermingles and moves around. Castle Rock is a prominently featured town in Maine. Movies like Cujo have addressed it. It's also in the stories like Dark Half, It, Needful Things, The Body, and also Shawshank, easy for me to say.
Redemption. Yeah.
That's the one. So
get
like
busy
I said,
talking or get busy dying, John.
So we're about 3 to 4 episodes in, depending on when you're listening to this. So let's make this really easy. How are you liking it so far, Aaron?
The first episode should just be called Easter Eggs, the series, because it's really the first time I watched it. I'm just like, oh, that's Stephen King. Oh, that's Cujo. That's Needful Things. That's The Body. That's da 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 da. And I kept doing that. I had to rewatch it when nobody was around just so I could understand what the hell was going on, because I was just paying attention to all the extra stuff. That said, it's a very slow burn, but not in that boring way. Not in that way that people say when they're trying to excuse why a movie makes you go to sleep. It's actually like a really clever, smart show that just has an added benefit to being set in Stephen King's world. So you get little nods and winks to stories that you know and love. But if you take all that out of it, it still works. And that's what I think is the most important part. It completely sets up this dynamic of Henry Deaver, who's this man who's suspected of killing his own father as a child and is now a lawyer for people on death row. And then his pursuit of a prisoner at Shawshank who has just been discovered after Warden dies. And he's a little interesting. He's played by Bill Skarsgård, who you might know as Pennywise. That's right. There's actors crossing genres of Stephen King stuff. So it's really atmospheric. It's very lyrical in the way it's told. It just really unfurls in a way that I really found riveting. I mean, it's a show that I couldn't wait until the next episode, and not because it left me on a cliffhanger, which is always a good thing.
Okay. Now, I want you to imagine this real quick. You're talking to a stranger or a new friend or whatever, and you're starting to get the idea that this might be something that they might like, but they don't know a lot about Stephen King. They haven't really watched a lot of his movies, but you have still the feeling that this is probably right up their alley. How would you sell them on this show?
It's a darker Lost.
Okay. And do you have a score? Do you want to give a score for this, or do you want to just...
I'm only 3 episodes in, so I want to reserve score. But as of right now, the first 3 episodes, probably about an 8. I really think I'm excited for where it's going. The first episode really kind of gets you on the hook. And then the second one just really, I mean, you're stuck on it. Like you're just wiggling on the hook, enjoying the fact that you're going to be someone's dinner.
I will step in and say, as someone who doesn't know Stephen King's works nearly to the extent that Aaron does, like not even a little bit, you're able to still follow along with the story and understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. You don't feel lost watching it. But I'm sure, like, there are times where, you know, somebody will catch something that's Stephen King-esque and it's like, oh, there's that and there's that. So you're not going to get those, you know, references, but you're still going to have a good time watching it.
Well, and some of them are so on the nose, like rabid dogs on the loose. Oh, gee, I wonder what that is. You know, so yeah, it's a cool show. Very cool. Hulu. All right. Now, last movie, Mission Impossible Fallout. We'll probably talk about this one a little bit longer, so skip ahead 10 minutes if you don't want to know anything about the Cruise, or if you're sick of hearing Amanda talk about Tom Cruise. I don't know.
How much she hates him and wants to burn an effigy of him.
That's not what I said.
That's what I heard.
Thankfully, he does stunts in this one, so he'll get a pass. But Tom Cruise returns as Ethan Hunt, and this time Ethan loses 3 balls of plutonium to a group known as the Apostles, also known as one of the dumbest names in terrorism, and must do the whole deep undercover thing to get them back. The government no longer trusts him, so they send Ethan along a partner slash assassin to get the job done where Ethan can't, in Henry Cavill's August Walker. Everybody gets deep because that's what you do in these kind of movies, and part of the plot eventually involves the enemy from the last film, Solomon Lane. Now, this marks the first direct sequel to the Mission Impossible series. This is the first time a movie that followed it actually reflects back on the events from the previous film, which is interesting when you're 6 movies deep, but that's cool that they've done that. And this series is now known more for its action than its story. You know, when it first started, it was really about the way everything unfolded. Now it's set piece leading the story, leading the set piece. So how were the set pieces, first off, in the latest Mission Impossible? Amanda, you love the stunts. Why don't you tell us about that?
It was really fun. So they have this, my favorite part is like a car scene, and just the way that they have it set up and how much
car scene.
The car chase scene.
The motorcycle chase?
But there's all the different cars and stuff that are working together. Yeah, okay. I'm trying not to tell them like when it's at, but they have part of it in the trailer anyway. But the way that it's laid out, and it takes like a decent amount of time, it's actually a lot of fun. So that's probably my favorite part of the movie was that scene. But you're in different parts of the world and in different weather climates and dealing with different circumstances. And everything is, of course, ridiculous and over the top. But it still manages to make it fun.
What about you, John? Where do you land with the stunts?
The stunts were great. I think it hit a pacing where it almost got hard to breathe. You held your breath for each moment that something was going on, and it was just tense the entire time. I think they did a really good job as far as laying out every little stunt from bit to bit and stringing them together into something where I'm sure there's somebody in my theater that passed out because they just couldn't breathe after a while.
I'm telling you, they have 4 distinct set pieces that I just off the top of my head. And in the movie, to me, doesn't stop. Like, it is nonstop. It hits the ground. It stops for like, it pauses for a minute, gives you a quick little story point, then gets into another action scene, you know, rinse and repeat. The Halo jump is probably my favorite jump, which Halo is a high altitude, low opening where you're actually wearing a freaking, you have to have oxygen in a helmet in order to actually make the jump because you're so high when you make it. That was intense to me. I mean, I was just like on the edge of my seat that entire scene. I got to go back and see it in IMAX because I thought it was that good. But every action scene, I think, was just riveting. I mean, every one. Usually in a movie like this, each one of these would focus as the finale set piece. Mm-hmm. But it's basically like 4 finale set pieces. The motorcycle chase that she's talking about was great. The helicopter one near the end was great.
God, that was ridiculous.
It was insane. I mean, they were all ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And he's doing every one of them. So I get what you're saying. He's a great stuntman. Also a little insane. A little nuts.
You know, there's something they played on with his character in this one where I kind of like I picked up on it and I'm like, huh, that's kind of how I live my life. And it was every time they're like, well, Ethan's off doing this again. What is Ethan doing that for? I don't know, but he thinks he can do it. Yeah, that's kind of like I think that's how a lot of conversations that revolve around me end up going. John's off doing this again. What is he doing that for? I don't know, but he thinks he can do it.
Man, you know, I was just thinking, when I think of Ethan Hunt, I think of John Davenport. That's exactly what was crossing my mind. He is so similar.
He does Halo jumps every weekend.
Every time when he's flying his little drones, that's just like jumping from a Halo or doing a Halo jump. I'm sorry, does that offend you?
No, you not talk at all. About it? Okay. No, we're all right.
How many, if you need a hug, we can do it now. How many times are we going to use the Scooby-Doo rubber mask thing in these movies? I mean, I got to say, that's probably getting a little overdone. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was one of the staples of the TV show.
I know, but at this point we're 6 movies in. It's like, okay. I mean, how many times are these meddling kids getting away with it, you know?
I think they only got away with it once in this movie, even though they tried to get away with it like 3 different times.
It's true. All right, so with stunts out of the way, What about the script? How was the story, John? What do you think of, quote unquote, the story?
There's a lot of the story that I absolutely loved. I think, I mean, it's hard to really talk about it without giving away too much information, but the story is there really to just drive the action from piece to piece. And it is a full story, and it does bring back Rebecca Ferguson's character as Ilsa Faust, and I just love that character. I love everything about her. But one of the things that I thought was the most interesting was the character of the White Widow. Did you catch who she was in the history of Mission Impossible?
Max's daughter, right? From the first movie or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was an incredibly cool nod to the very first movie, which is something else they've never really done, by bringing back Max in a way, by bringing back, Vanessa Redgrave is somewhere out there saying, hey, they can still use me. And they're like, no, let's just bring in let's just get this girl in here who smiles like you, and we'll call her your daughter. Why not?
And she acts weird like you. So it works out.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, Amanda, what about you? I know you have thoughts on this story.
I do. Okay. So. I just can't get over some of this stuff. I know that it's supposed to be ridiculous, but they do so many ridiculous things in this script, and then they start the movie with something so lazy, and it was so hard to get past it, because I'll be very honest, I enjoyed a lot of that movie, but I could not get past the laziest piece of writing.
The thing that set the plot in motion, right?
Basically. And they could have done so many. Look, Ethan Hunt is ridiculous. Like, ridiculous. Tom Cruise is ridiculous. You could probably put any absurd plot point in there, and it would work because Tom Cruise is ridiculous. We all know it. That's what we expect. But they went super lazy, and I was so irritated that they have, as you mentioned, these four incredible, like, set pieces, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
They have, it feels like you're watching multiple movies in one movie, but then they do the dumbest possible thing. And I was like, God, there's some predictability as the story goes on. I knew exactly what was going to happen, but I still enjoyed where they went with it towards, you know, as it progressed. But just that introduction, the way that they set the plot in motion, it really bothered me.
Yeah, I will agree on the story. I was not a fan of the story, but I also don't care.
Yeah, if you can get past it. But I don't know why it bothered me so much. I was just like,
I don't either.
We can do better than this, guys.
Yeah, it was fine. It didn't.
Can you guys clue me in as to what plot point you're talking about? Or
at the very beginning, we can't. You know what? Skip ahead. Basically, the case that gets the plutonium stolen.
Okay.
When he goes to save his friend and just leaves it laying there.
That's and then they're all like, oh my God, I forgot about the plutonium case. And it's like, dude, you're Tom Cruise. You're telling me that you can't grab the case as you run to get your friend? You do everything that is impossible. This is Mission Impossible. And you're telling me you can't scoop that? It was right next to him. It was right between him and the car.
It was right next to Simon Pegg. It was right next to Benji.
It was on Tom Cruise's side.
Yeah.
It was right next to the car.
You know what? I didn't care what happened with that scene.
I didn't either.
Here's the thing. Like, it's not any different than he's done in every single other movie. And they were just hammering that point home, where Ethan Hunt is not willing to sacrifice one good life for everybody. He's not willing to do that. He's done that every single movie. That's not something that's new or different for him. And it's just that this time they just really were hammering away that it happened with the cop in front of the garage as well. It happened there. I mean, that's just who Ethan Hunt is. I think that's just that they were outlining the character so that you had an understanding as to what his motivations kind of were. So it makes sense as to why he like bends over backwards for the wife that he had to leave behind.
2 seconds. All I'm going to say is that I agree with you, and I just wish they wouldn't have acted so surprised that it was gone and missing. Like, they could have just had him go.
Expected it.
Yeah.
I knew that was going
to
happen.
Or they could have just had Tom Cruise go, I'm not willing to risk that.
All right. Well, here's what we do know. We know Tom Cruise is a star, but you also have Henry Cavill and the Mission Impossible crew of Ving Rhames, Simon Pegg, Rebecca Ferguson. Was there anybody who was a standout for you, John?
Standout? No. I really enjoyed Henry Cavill, Rebecca Ferguson. There was a set of stairs with my wife's names on it for her.
Jeez.
Angela Bassett, I think I really enjoyed seeing her come on to the crew and become part of the, well, sort of become part of the MI group. I liked seeing Angela Bassett take a heavy duty role. I mean, but really everybody is just as great and charming as they always are.
I can't agree on Henry Cavill. As much as I like Henry Cavill, like, he's an actor I would watch do anything. I just felt like he's a block of wood. Whenever it was he's great in the fights. I mean, in the fights, he's amazing, but he's got the Tom Cruise effect for me. When he was doing the acting part, I'm like, well, that was okay. That's not menacing at all. And it feels like you're trying to be an assassin, kind of, but I'm not very threatened, and I should be because you're huge. So, yeah, I wasn't loving the Cavill, but I still love the Cavill, even though I didn't love the Cavill. Does that make sense? I don't know.
I get it.
It does.
Man, anybody else stand out to you?
The mustache. It did stand out for me.
Henry Cavill's mustache?
It did. It didn't bother me as much as I thought it would.
Why would that? Just because everybody's so focused on it?
It was a huge controversy.
We had a CGI removed for Justice League. Why was that a deal breaker?
I don't know. I was just going to ask you guys. Can you explain to me, am I missing something where like a mustache symbolizes something in the Mission Impossible movies?
Was it a character point? What a stupid thing to hang your hat on. What kind of hill do you die on for that?
I think that was just power trip.
Paramount's like, yeah, you can't shave the mustache. And I would have loved to be in that meeting where Henry's like, why? Well, because it's very important to your character. No, it's not. Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. When you're flying a helicopter, mustache controls it.
Right. Well, there is a poster for Fallout where it's Tom Cruise hanging from a mustache or a parachute that looks like a mustache.
That makes sense. The mustache saved him at one point. I just didn't see it. I fell asleep, I guess. I don't know. Got popped.
The whole mustache thing was basically the Paramount kind of flexing their muscles for the little bit they can do for a while now, because they're even at one point, some of the parting gifts that people got from the wrap of the movie was like one cool Mission Impossible fact on one side of it, and the other side was like an imprint of the mustache. That's how big of a deal.
That's really funny.
That's amazing.
So on Henry, though, I have to agree with Aaron that he is underwhelming in his performance. And I don't want to say what type of performance, but there are certain parts where you're just like, dude, all right. But he's so attractive that you're like, I can get through this. No problem.
Yeah, I didn't have that part. It's just more like he's Billy Badass.
And I got to say, he is so cool. Like, I just want to see him I just want to see him punch people.
When people say we want to replace Superman, I'm like, you're drunk, because he looks like Superman.
He is so cool.
And if he's on Justice League, he acts like him.
Yeah, he's hard. It's hard to see anyone but him as Superman now that I've seen him other places. It just doesn't work. There was a movie with him and Bruce Willis where he's running around. I'm like, why am I watching Superman run on the street when he can just fly?
It would be great if he did. They're doing the Halo jump, and that's how he lands. He just lands softly. And Ethan's like, how did you get down here? Don't worry about it, kid.
Yeah.
I just want his long arms to like wrap me like a burrito.
Okay, that's just creepy. So, last question. Well, can we get a movie without a countdown timer? That's one thing that I want to say, but that's a movie problem I have. I just hate countdown timers because we all know they're gonna stop 10 seconds or less, right? That's required by law. Whatever.
Well, this is much less.
Well, this is the sixth film in the franchise. Final question before score. Where does this one land for you, and should they make another one, Amanda?
Well, this probably isn't fair for me to answer because I haven't seen all of them. I've probably only seen two or three others, and I could not tell you which ones were which.
I've seen them all, and I can't tell you which ones were.
So, I mean, I feel like they've probably warmed their welcome, but honestly, if you look at the box office dollars, the people that do enjoy the movies and can separate the script from, you know, everything else, they enjoy them. So if people are still liking them and people are raving about this one, make another one for those people.
Yeah, we should actually point out, this is the highest Rotten Tomatoes score of Tom Cruise's career. His entire career. Not just the franchise, the entire career. And that includes Best Picture winner Rain Man. Yeah, this is the highest, 98%. 98%. This is almost a perfect rating. So it's fantastic.
Which tells you, first of all, that there's something wrong with Rotten Tomatoes, but it is a really great movie.
Yeah, true story.
For me, MI1 is the top of the heap. Then the one before this,
Rogue Nation.
There we go. Rogue Nation, then this one, then Ghost Protocol, then at the very end you have the John Woo garbage fire.
So I would say Mission Impossible 1 is still my favorite. Love that movie. Ghost Protocol is number 2. This one, Fallout. Then Rogue Nation. Then Mission Impossible 2. Then Mission Impossible 3. Now you might ask, how could Mission Impossible 2 be better than Mission Impossible 3? I did not like the way J.J. Abrams shot the action in that movie. It was really poorly shot, I thought. Very jarring and jittery. I even though Philip Seymour Hoffman was great in parts, I did not like the wife storyline. And the absolute absurdity to every single thing that happens in Mission Impossible 2 just makes it like one of those bad movies I like. So it edged it.
I get it. I get where you're coming from on that. You're wrong, but I get where you're coming from on that.
He was constantly in action where his hair was blinding him and still making direct contact. It was amazing.
It's amazing that he didn't have like a duster on the entire time. just flapping in the wind in slow motion. Everything else is at normal speed, but that damn duster is moving in slow motion. Is that CGI? No. We just somehow shot that at 260 frames per second. As everything else is shot normal speed.
And plus, if it wasn't for Mission Impossible 2, Doug Ray Scott would be Wolverine. And then
what? Yeah, okay. You know what? I'm sorry. Oh. You're absolutely right.
It's the best movie in the franchise.
It's the best movie in the franchise because Doug Ray Scott as Wolverine would have been bad.
Exactly.
That's an excellent point.
This is how you win people over. Do you want Hugh Jackman to not be Wolverine? Do you want the guy who was the awful villain in Mission Impossible 2? You choose. Suddenly, great movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
With doves. With bullets, with guns that shoot doves. That was, that's fantastic. All right, so $10 is the full price of a mission. Amanda, what do you give Mission Impossible Fallout?
$5.
All right, so that's okay. John, what do you give
Fallout? $7.50.
All right, I give it $7.
I'd totally give it $6.50 if it wasn't for that stupid plot point.
Wow, you're really just going to keep hammering that.
Oh, my God. Huh?
I guess you're the Henry Cavill to our Ethan Hunt.
Her mouth is saying one thing, but her tone of her voice saying something completely different.
I know, right? Somebody feels like they got a little cruise hurt. All right. That's like butt hurt, but with Tom Cruise.
I don't know why I would be cruise hurt.
I just like it.
Okay.
Because to you, he's butt.
No, but okay. I don't know where this conversation went, but here we are.
All right.
This is awkward.
Let's go to new releases.
All right, so coming up on August 3rd, we have Darkest Minds. Imprisoned by an adult world, now fears everyone under the age of 18, a group of teens form a resistance group and fight back to reclaim the control of their future. This stars Bradley Whitford, Mandy Moore, Amandla. It's like Amanda, but with a la at the end of it instead of a
Is Stenberg. That really the name?
It's Spanish, yeah. Okay. Maybe.
Sure.
Was Stenberg, Amandla Stenberg, and Gwendolyn Christie.
I was just going with the law.
Okay.
Moving right along, we have Christopher Robin, also on August 3rd. A working class family man, Christopher Robin, encounters his childhood friend, Winnie the Pooh, who helps him rediscover the joy in life. I need a Winnie the Pooh, honestly. I just need one. It stars Ewan McGregor, Hayley Atwell, hello Hayley, and Bronte Carmichael, and Mark Gatiss. Then after that, we have The Spy Who Dumped Me. Audrey and Morgan are best friends who unwittingly become entangled in an international conspiracy when one of the women discovers the boyfriend who dumped them was actually a spy. This stars Mila Kunis, hello Mila, Kate McKinnon, hi, and Justin Theroux.
What, Justin doesn't get a hello?
Hello, Justin.
Somebody else can do Justin, that's fine. Then on VOD, also on August 3rd, we have Night Comes On. Angela Lemaire is released from juvenile detention on the eve of her 18th birthday. Haunted by her past, she embarks on a journey with her 10-year-old sister, because that sounds like a good idea, that could destroy their future. This is directed by Jordan Spiro and it stars Dominique Fishback. I just like saying Fishback. Tatum Marilyn Hall and Natasha Fuller. Also on VOD, we have Chelsea on Chelsea Beach, which is based on an Ian McEwan novel. It's a 1962 England and young couple find their idyllic romance colliding with issues of sexual freedom and societal pressures, leading them to an awkward but fateful wedding night. That sounds really awkward. Starring Saoirse Ronan. Hi. How you doing? Emily Watson, Anna Marie Duff, Samuel West and Billy Howell. And finally, on Netflix, we have Like Father. A workaholic woman who is left at the altar takes her honeymoon trip anyways, at like you should, with the overachieving father who left her mother because he believed in the same sort of thing as she did. That doesn't sound like a party at all. But it is directed by Lauren Miller Rogan, who you might notice is also married to Seth Rogen. Kristen Bell.
Well, you just can't get away from that dude this episode.
I really can't this episode. It stars Kristen Bell, Seth Rogen, and Kelsey Grammer. So,
hey, Kristen Bell. Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
All right. So, we have several movies, a couple of VOD ideas, and let's go with Amanda. What are you thinking? What do you think you're going to
go
with?
Oh, my gosh. This week is going to be so good. So, top notch is going to be Christopher Robin because Winnie the Pooh. But Like Father and Darkest Minds and The Spy Who Dumped Me, I'm going to see all of those.
What?
Yeah.
Go outside.
I don't need to.
The sun is out there. Who needs to be around that?
My God.
It's hot. I don't need that.
All right. Well, we want to be outside when it's warm out. Let's wait till winter.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm going... None. Like Christopher Robin, I guess.
Like, yeah, Christopher Robin.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not like driving me crazy, as the kids say, if they say that. But I'll check it out because everybody seems to be pretty excited about it. I'll check it out. I'd rather watch an Eeyore movie. I think that'd be more fun. It's like John Davenport, the movie.
I was going to say John starring in Winnie the Pooh, didn't you know he's Eeyore?
He doesn't like when I call him Eeyore. He left.
All right, so I think, you know, it's tough because I really do want to check out Chelsea Beach, but I'm more interested in The Spy Who Dumped Me.
Really?
Yeah, I actually am more interested
in Kate McKinnon looks, I would see it for Kate McKinnon. It doesn't look great.
The casting is what sells that movie, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good time and it's going to be a laugh riot. I'm going to put my money on that.
Okay. Laugh riot.
The kids still say that, right? The kids still say laugh riot.
No, I don't know that they've ever never said that.
Never.
Where did you grow up again?
Who knows?
All right, Guam or something, wasn't it? Or what was
something
it? Panama.
Like that.
Panama.
Guam,
Panama. It's all the same thing. I mean, I'm going to stop.
They're
right
not
there.
Here.
Same difference. All right. Now we go to our From the Outside In topic, Impossibly Impossible Missions, which ironically do not feature anything from Mission Impossible. That's right. We're going to talk about the missions in film that we think were absolutely impossible. As in, we watch the movie. We might like the movie. We might love the movie. Might not like the movie. But we can't fathom how that mission succeeded. And we should say that we're considering a mission to be something that it's defined like as a plan or a goal that's for the greater good, aka not a heist. So a lot of people are like throwing heists out there. No, heists don't count. They don't count unless you're stealing something for the greater good, I guess, maybe. But all right, so why do we love this stuff? These absurdly complicated plots where a guy, gal, or gaggle of people have to accomplish something so insane and unbelievable that there's no feasible way it could work, but yet it does.
I think it's probably just because it's fun. We don't necessarily need something that's super sophisticated. We just like to enjoy it. We want to sit down and we want to be taken on an adventure that we know is not going to happen, but we wish it were happening to us. We wish we were that cool. And that's really all we need is something to enjoy. Not everything has to be where, like, you have to sit down and think about it and overthink it. And it doesn't need to be realistic. It's a movie.
Unless Tom Cruise is in it, then we have to think very deeply about it.
You just have to have, like, a not stupid plot point.
Ay, Dios mío.
What about you, John? Why do we like these movies?
It's possible that we like these movies because they're very closely related to horror movies, in a sense. But they kind of tickle the same kind of senses that horror movies do, but in a different way, and I believe they elicit a different reaction to us. So whereas horror movies are using jump scares to frighten us, to get us to get our heart racing, and then they really freak us out by something going oogly googly in the front of the screen and it goes away and then we are relieved, we are going through the complete opposite direction with these sorts of movies where we are racing to an apex of like tension, and then it releases. And it kind of does it in a way that it does it in a way that we appreciate, because they only ever really work when they sell us on who our protagonists are. So I think it has a lot to do with the personality of the character we're dealing with, versus we like to be scared. We like to feel tension, and we like to go to the movies to feel things. And I think these help really elicit feelings.
People need to know that the impossible is possible. I really just, when I go to a movie, yes, there's sometimes where I want to be intellectually stimulated, but a lot of times I'm going to escape whatever's going on in my life. And I know that there are so many things that I wish I could do, and cool things that I wish I could accomplish, and a cool mission that I could go on with my buddies. And I know it would be impossible to do whatever it is that I'm going to do. And I just like going and seeing other people live that and live vicariously through them. And just, you know, that's what entertainment sometimes should be. It should be not only check your brain, take your brain out and throw it at the screen. Just throw it. I don't need logic. I think sometimes we get too enamored with logic. It becomes kind of a poison pill to a degree, because we're such a cynical society anymore. It's like you can't watch something like these kinds of movies where these thing impossible things happen and people don't dissect it. That can never
right,
happen.
Amanda?
That can never,
right?
That can never happen. That's impossible. That's just never – that's ridiculous. Da, 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 da. Sometimes you just need to – you know what? I don't need it to make sense. I just want it to be fun when it happens. Most movies, none of that stuff would happen or could happen. I don't need realism, especially in an action movie. Or something, you know, like an Inglourious Basterds. I don't need a whole lot of logic there. Star Wars. I mean, come on. You're talking about people swinging laser swords and moving
space
things. Yeah. I mean, there's just all this stuff that doesn't matter. I just want to have fun and not have to think and not have my thought matter. Because it's just, hey, that was pretty awesome. I can't believe that happened. You know why? Because it couldn't happen. That's why it's awesome. I just think it's cathartic. So let's get into this. Okay. So each of us take two missions from movies, TV, wherever you're taking them from. Two instances where, as hard as you try to think about it, even if you still love it, there's no way to accomplish the goal. No way. Even if they did, which I'm sure most of them they did. So let's share those missions. And we each have two, and we'll just do round robin. We'll do one, and then we'll do the other. So, John, what's your first one? John, Amanda, me. We'll just do it that way.
All right. So my very first one comes from a little watched movie that may or may not, might as well be called Escape from Space Station.
Okay.
And it's a movie called Lockout. It's from 2012. It stars Guy Pearce, who does an amazing job as being this really charming, really funny, really abrasive guy. His name is Snow. Not Snake, but Snow. And he gets tasked to, because people think he's a spy and everything, and so he gets tasked to prove that he deserves freedom by going to save the president's daughter, not the president, but the president's daughter.
It's different. It's not Escape from New York. It's different.
It's different from being trapped on a space station that also happens to be a prison where thousands of prisoners have just broken free. It's a nuts kind of mission. He gets put on the space station. He has to fight his way through a whole bunch of crazy psychopaths. He somehow is superhumanly strong, but they never really go into it. He also is trying to figure out how he got set up for this crime that he didn't commit. And it's just nuts. There's just no way that he can manage so many things at one time, on top of having to deal with the president's daughter, who's a little bit of a, you know, a pain. She wants to know what's going on. She wants to be bossy. She doesn't escape when she's supposed to escape. She's done a whole lot of things wrong. Still kind of cool, but if she would have just left, the movie would have been over. And if you haven't seen the movie, really go out and watch it. It's directed by Luc Besson, and the final parts of the movie is great, because essentially there's a Halo jump from space. I don't know how that works, because of like people burn up when they come back into space, into the atmosphere. I don't actually know, because I have never seen it, but there's a whole lot of stuff that happens. But they make it happen. They survive. It really is just a crazy nuts story. It's a lot of fun, and that's why I decided to talk about it tonight. Have you ever seen it, Aaron?
I have seen it many times. I do want to, sorry, I don't want to be that guy that corrects you, but it wasn't directed by Luc Besson. It was directed by Steve Ledger and James Mather. I think he might have produced it, but he didn't direct it.
He might have produced it. I know I was revisiting some of the information. I knew his name popped up. So my mistake. You're right.
It's though. I actually really, really dig that movie, and it's so much like Escape from New York that they were actually sued by John Carpenter and lost. So
wow.
It's definitely a ripoff of Escape from New York. And you're right. The entire movie is ridiculous. At least Escape from New York. I mean, you're on Earth, and you can kind of see where this might happen. This is just like everything about it makes zero sense.
No,
but I still really like it.
Guy Pearce does an amazing job as being like this smarmy, funny, charming, like super soldier kind of guy.
He is great. Absolutely great.
I would pay to see another movie like with snow in it.
I would too. And maybe you could just do a remake of Escape from New York and just cast him as Snake. That'd be fine.
I would actually reboot Escape from New York, but with Snake, but put Snow. So don't cast him as Snake. Send Snow in to get him instead of Snake.
There you go. Then Kurt Russell still is the god.
See, I'm doing you a favor here.
Will he ever not be the god to you?
No.
Is there anything he could ever do?
Well, he can. Well, yeah. No.
He was in Sky High. Does that even get him close?
Nope. You could actually find him with a dead hooker in his trunk, and I'd probably be like, "Yeah, Kurt, you wacky guy. You shouldn't have done that, but I forgive you. I forgive you.
All those good times in those movies.
I know, man. I mean, hey, who hasn't had an indiscretion? You know what I'm saying? Amanda, what about you? What's your first mission?
So I know there's a lot of, I don't want to say controversy, but there are people who have questioned the authenticity of the science behind The Martian, which is basically about him going to Mars. I mean, it's really that simple. Mm-hmm. But he's also living out there. So he's making his life. And I've done some, I don't want to say that I've researched it because I have not looked into the authenticity of the articles, but I read some articles who they say they did the research. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is legitimate. A lot of that is factual information. However, part of his mission is deterred by this giant windstorm that throws everything around, and everything is just in chaos because of this windstorm, which is possible for it to happen on Mars. However, and I'm going to quote this because I don't know how the science works.
Okay.
In the Martian, the atmosphere is only 1% as thick as Earth's, so a Mars wind of 100 miles per hour, which is possible, although quite rare on the surface, would only have the same dynamic force as a 10 mile per hour wind on Earth. You could fly a kite in it, but it wouldn't knock you down, from The Guardian. So,
damn.
Seems pretty, like, and I remember watching some of those things, and I thought maybe, like, the water, the way he did the water and things like that, like, this was just ridiculous. A lot of that is still pretty factual, but this is the thing that's ridiculous out of this movie, which I think is funny that it seems to be the most obvious thing, which is definitely a Hollywood choice to be like, well, we've got to send something, we've got to make this plot happen somehow, so we're just going to make everything blow around.
Or a book. It might have been in the book. I don't know.
I didn't read it. But it's just, to me, it's ridiculous. It's not, obviously, it's not possible. So it's just kind of laughable. But it's a Hollywood thing. It happens, I guess.
No, it doesn't happen. This whole movie is ridiculous. I know people love it. They're like, Martian's a great movie.
I know you have thoughts.
It's so accurate science. Shut up. He runs into a rocket that just happens to be functional when he needs it. And God, this movie drives me crazy, especially when people were like, oh, it's so smart. No, it's not. Everything, literally every single thing he needs to survive just happens to already be on Mars. What a convenient problem to have. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. That
you
movie
have,
drives
you have
me
more
nuts.
Feelings on this. I should have had you do this one.
No, that movie drives me insane, especially the rocket thing. I'm just like, what? Well, they told you that it's well, of course they told you. They had to plan it ahead so we had some way to get off the stupid thing. Yeah, we get it. God. Dumb.
Worth it just to hear that rant.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
So awesome.
I almost feel like we were talking about Tom Cruise for a second. I'm sorry.
I know, right?
I'm sorry.
The emotions.
There is so much aggro going on right now in this episode. I mean, it's not like Seth Rogen is a problem, right?
Well, no.
No.
Wait, just think if he would have directed The Martian, then he probably would have got high on a potato.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Let's find a way to smoke it and we'll survive.
Right. We're just going to live off of smoked potatoes and stuff. I really am having trouble. Like, Aaron made some valid points as to why the movie is impossible, but it sounds like Amanda's more upset that the weather is what made the movie impossible. I'm just so confused. What's going on?
Well, she stated that the science shows that wind couldn't have happened,
which is what sets the entire thing in motion. Like, all of the problems were caused. A lot of the problems were caused by this giant windstorm, which scientifically could not happen to that level. I mean,
yeah, but in the script it says giant windstorm. And so as far as the science of the script is concerned, it happened.
Well, that's what her point is. Like, that's ridiculous. It's impossible. It's an impossible possibility. Impossibility or something. One of those words.
Of the impossible things that happened in that movie, that one sounds a little nitpicky.
You know, man, what? I don't think I like your attitude.
Yeah. Feels like a whole lot of
aggro. I don't even have the attitude today.
I'm feeling like you do. Did so you put your aggro. Sassy pants on today?
My sassy pants. It's too hot for pants right now.
All right. My first impossible mission is The Lord of the Rings. And basically all three movies are one in terms of the plot. So I'm just going to mush them all together.
In the movie?
Yeah. The whole point of the movie is you take this ring, hike your ass over to Mount Doom, and chuck it into the fire, right? That's the plot. We all agree. That's the plot of 12 hours or whatever. So they're supposed to go as a pack. They separate way too early. Their guide dies, till he doesn't. They pick up a creepy-ass straggler that tries to murder them several times. And when he's not plotting their death, he's in the corner masturbating to a picture of your ring. So there's a guy you should be concerned with. Stop bringing him with on your trip. This is the Hitcher, basically. The Tolkien version of the Hitcher. So you survive all this, only to get wrapped up in a gigantic web by a humongous spider that you miraculously escape from, get to this mountain, climb up it, get carried up it, and then you fight the same little serial killer you knew was trouble from the get-go, the same guy that's been masturbating to your ring the whole time. I'm sorry, if you weren't smart enough to talk those stupid eagles into giving you a ride, you'd have died a long-ass time ago. It just does not make sense, nor does it work. But I love the movies.
Are you sure?
I like your added one, like, four words.
I do love the movies.
Are you sure?
No, I do. I do. Hey, there are a lot of movies where I think the plots are ridiculous. Maybe not to the degree that Amanda does, but that I think are ridiculous that I still really, really enjoy. And I love the extended cut of Lord of the Rings. But I do think they would be so dead. There's so many bad decisions in those movies.
I think I've seen the extended cut of The Lord of the Rings once, just once, and only once, and I never needed to like lose that amount of time in my life ever again.
It is not that afternoon.
I don't enjoy the movies. Yeah, it's not even an afternoon. It's like a day and a half watching the extended cut. It's not long. That I don't enjoy those movies. They're great. I just can't. I don't have the time to sit down for that anymore. It's weird because like maybe I don't understand the subject we're on, but I thought we were supposed to be enjoying ourselves and talking about these stories that we think are nuts and how they work and how wonderful they are. But it sounds like you're both angry at your stories.
No, the whole point
we're talking about how it's not working.
We're talking about how they don't work. Just because you looked at it a different way doesn't make us angry, man. We're still talking about movies we love. They just have plots that didn't make any damn sense.
Okay.
You know, like every Michael Bay movie.
True that.
I mean, yeah,
wait, isn't the plot to be inappropriate with young ladies?
That's definitely a plot point. Yeah.
Right.
Make sure you have a 16-year-old bend over a car. Very important to Michael Bay. I'm sorry, they're 19, but they sure look like they're 16.
Make any changes you want. Not this.
Exactly. Does it matter who gets cast? No. As long as you have a hot brunette leaning over a car. Very important. Right.
Make sure she washes my Ferrari at least twice a day. And that's not a euphemism.
All right. What is your second one?
So my second one is one that I labored over. I was like, you know, I really didn't know if I was going to bring this up or not. But Quentin Tarantino's The Inglourious Basterds, when the bastards go and kill Hitler. mm-hmm. which is something that didn't actually happen in real life, but they it's a perfectly fanfic rewrite of history where you have Shoshana out there. She's about to set fire to the theater Hitler sitting in, which is really the only solid plan that this whole thing has. And then you have a bunch of soldiers kind of bumbling their way through a thing, and it just happens to work. I think that's one of the joys of this, where things just happen to work, even though everything else points it to not working. You have like two morons running around with bombs strapped to their legs to try to make it happen. And it's one of these movies that even though there's no basis of reality for it, it still has a great amount of fun to it. The characters are something that are crafted out of love and enjoyment. The story is told out of just pure, like, I don't know, psychotic fugue state thing that's happening. It's just a great story with a great little mission at the end that for only because everyone just happened to show up at the same time did it work, and I think that's great.
Do you speak Italian? Buongiorno. Yeah, and the only way it works is because was it Hans Lando? Is that the character's name?
Yeah, Hans Lando.
Yeah, he basically just turns himself in. Hey, I want to make a deal. And if it wasn't for that, the plan wouldn't have worked. So, yeah, I love that movie. That's such a – I really – when I first saw that and you see how they do the revisionist history, that was such a great moment in film to know, oh – because you figure the whole movie, there's no way that they're going to kill Hitler.
Right.
Because, you know, it doesn't happen in real life. But then he does it, and they're like, oh, that's brilliant, because nobody would have expected that.
Right. I mean, I was with you with that. The whole time, I'm like, yeah, there's no way this is going to actually work. He's not gonna, like, but then we don't realize that we're not watching something that's a doco or a reliving some or a history piece about World War II. It's a Quentin Tarantino slaughterhouse movie.
Yeah, and Michael Fassbender is great in that movie, and he's very limited. He's got that small role in down in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about. Where?
Oh no, it's yeah.
It's such a great moment.
Oh, that
great
is
moment.
A great scene.
Great scene. Good pick, man. And I think you're on the same page. It's just we just maybe said it angrier. So maybe we need to change our tone, Amanda. Make sure you give it a more upbeat tone about the dumbness of what you're going to talk about next.
It's all in delivery.
It is. I guess I just need to be happier. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
That was the fakest thing I've ever heard in my life.
So Fast and the Furious 6 has the most ridiculous plot piece ever. I don't know how they got away with this. I still loved it. Here's your enthusiasm, John. I love this movie. I love this entire franchise. Every movie is ridiculous. Every movie has impossibilities, and they get even more impossible as they continue to go down. I'm surprised they're not part of Mission Impossible franchise at this point. However,
I think Mission Impossible takes their cues from it at this point.
They probably do. There is a heist in almost all of these, so I had to find my way around this.
Because this is the one where it's not really a heist.
Yes.
I gotcha.
So they're trying to stop these mercenaries, and they're on this plane. Well, so is Michelle Rodriguez, who's one of the good guys, and, you know, she's fighting a bad guy, and there's all these good and bad guys, and Vin Diesel's in the plane, and so they've got
to... Think that we have all these cars to take this airplane down.
They rev up all of their vehicles and go down a, not kidding you, 6-minute long runway scene that seems to just never end. The runway never has an ending.
It's only 6 minutes?
It's 6 minutes.
Feels a lot longer.
Yeah, I thought it was like 34.
No, but it's 6 minutes of the plane going like dang near full speed the entire time. And somehow
overseas, they do have much longer runways.
They must. Yeah. And the cars are just inexplicitly fast. I don't know. It's ridiculous. So
this
anyway,
one happens in England, so the wind density is different, so you need the longer runway because like
there's
wind
a Mars connection,
right? Air doesn't work the same way, so you need a longer runway.
He's making fun of you,
John,
and I would not take it,
Davenport. I'm gonna shit all over your Muppet movie for this.
Wow.
Just wait.
I'm pretty sure there's a whole lot of shitting all over the Muppet movie within the Muppet movie.
Well, I'm going to shit all over all of your hopes and dreams.
All right, let's stop shitting and get back to the runway.
It's true. So anyway, it's a very short short situation that they just need to stop this plane. They manage to blow up the entire plane with their vehicles after it goes down a runway for 6 minutes. This is how they stop it. They're just like, we're just going to keep going. Eventually, we'll be able to get there. Eventually, we can stop it because there is no end in sight on this runway. And sure as shit, there is no end in sight, and they get to blow up the plane. So it's ridiculous. I love it, but I feel like everybody who was in the theater was watching that, and they were like, "How? I'm going to check my watch right now. It's been at least 15 minutes that we've been on this runway. I could have gotten off my own runway, gone to the airport, left that.
Taking a flight.
Yeah. And all in less time than it took for them.
Are you sure it was only 6 minutes?
I mean, because I didn't watch the whole movie again, but I did watch the clip, and that was only 6 minutes.
I swear but, it was longer, well, but...
Just the plane being at, like, full speed, because they do have more that happens on that runway before that, but the plane...
My favorite part is when that thing ends after that long-ass thing, and it just... The plane finally comes to a stop, and it's just 2 inches, and then it bumps into the end of the runway. It's like, what? Yeah. What?
We got it just in time!
How did that just happen?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense, and I didn't care.
It's ridiculous.
That was I'm pretty sure most people who saw that movie didn't care.
They didn't. I mean, I think I my group were like, saying,
"That's gonna happen."
That was ridiculous. But I think most of us just kind of laughed it off and was like, "Yeah, it's ridiculous," but it was still a ton of fun.
If you watch those movies and you're debating the logic of it,
Yeah, what's the one where they're driving, and I don't know cars, but they're driving a car that should not be on Arctic ice, and it's just like
that's
driving
around. That's the most
around.
Recent one, yeah. Because yeah, like, that's how you drive on ice in a Ferrari. Or Lamborghini.
Yeah, well, I mean, all-wheel drive in those Lamborghinis. I mean, it's possible.
No, it's... Yes, sure. Okay. There's science there. If the wind velocity catches you at the right moment.
Right.
It propels you at the right angle.
Lord.
Sweet heavens.
All right. Well, my last one is Armageddon. An asteroid is dropping meteor showers on Earth like they're hot. Dropping them like they're hot. And it's on a collision course for global destruction. So NASA, in all their infinite wisdom, decides the best course of action is to take a group of untrained bubbleheads led by the greatest deep core driller in the entire world, because apparently they measure this, Harry Stamper. That's right, back when Bruce Willis used to act. Shoot him into space with less than 18 days of training, land on the asteroid, and because he's a damn American hero, Stamper saves AJ, makes us all cry, uses remote detonators to remote detonates the bomb, inside the asteroid, and he saves Earth. That is the most ridiculous plot for a Man on a Mission movie I've ever seen, and I just don't care. I just don't care. Every time I watch it, I feel like I'm watching American Heroes. I feel like I should be standing up and saluting these sons of bitches. I'm like, yes, sir. Great job, Harry Stamper. It would never work, but it drills my heart every time. It really does. I cry every time. Yeah, take care of her, AJ. No, Eric. Oh, it just makes me so sad. So I don't care how ridiculous it is. I love that movie. There, John. Did I do it more positive for you that time?
Yeah, I mean, you did it a lot more positive that time. I mean, that sounded like a movie you actually love, not something you're angry at.
You gotta admit, that's a lot of time walking when they could have like just ridden the Eagles. Couldn't somebody ask them? Did nobody like just phone the Eagles and say, hey, can we just get a ride to Mount Doom? We just got to drop a ring in and we're done. That's it.
Well, I'm sure at some point in time, which they could probably cut the scene or something where the Eagles like dropped them off and they were like, all right, how much are you going to tip your Uber driver for this? I mean,
Uber Eagles.
Yeah.
I would watch that. And I have to mention this because I found this when I was researching the movie and it made me mad. Roger Ebert named Armageddon the worst film of 1998. That's the same year that Spice World came out.
Whoa.
Yeah. And Armageddon somehow is the worst film of 19. You
hold on a second. What are you trying to say right now?
Exactly what you think I'm saying.
You're wrong.
No, Armageddon is better than Spice World. And it's not close.
Yeah.
Can any of them drill? Never mind. I'll take that back. Because they can.
They can sing, though. Those songs are still... I can still sing them.
Let's not.
I'm not going to. Trust me, everyone has had enough of my singing for the year.
I don't disagree with you. All right, well, those are our picks, but let's go to what some listeners thought. Amanda, who do you got?
I've got some long ones.
We always post the topic in the Facebook group, so these are comments from the Facebook group we selected.
Yeah, so strap in.
Okay.
Matt Barnes says, now there are several I could mention. Luke Skywalker and a small squad of rebels destroying the Death Star in A New Hope. Two groups of astronauts attempting to destroy asteroids in Armageddon and Deep Impact. However, these are more believable than the lunacy of Daniel LaRusso winning the All-Valley Under-18 Karate Championship. Now, I'll admit, this mission probably isn't for the greater good, though I suspect that LaRusso isn't the only victim of Cobra Kai ass-kickings at school. This mission is one of self-preservation, but it's Daniel's mission nonetheless. He's charged with defeating Johnny Lawrence and the rest of Cobra Kai, thus freeing his classmates from an environment of fear. And Daniel not only faces every member of Cobra Kai who has been tormenting him since the school year started, but he beats every single one. And he does this by training for a month and a half, from zero martial arts experience to All-Valley champ in a month and a half. This is movie magic at its finest.
It's an illegal kick. Can I just go back to Star Wars? Because I totally agree with that one. That's absolutely absurd. I mean, how the hell does the Force bend laser shots into the blowing up the Death Star?
I mean, that's probably true, but we just look past all of this.
Well, we do, but I'm just saying.
Those are proton torpedoes, by the way.
Oh, Jesus. We got one of those people on here. I didn't realize. I'm sorry. All right, nerd.
I mean, you want to call it what it is. They're not laser shots. They were torpedoes.
So
they just...
I got you. Yeah. Bending the torpedo shots down the little bendy thing and making the curves and taking the turns. It's kind of...
That's so scientific.
You know...
It's so good.
The wind velocity in the galaxy far, far away.
Right. It works completely different.
It does.
It does. Yeah, it does.
So my next one is from John Sanford.
But it wasn't a legal kick.
Who says, forgetting Sarah Marshall, Kristen Bell is quite simply unforgettably charming. Now, he followed this up to explain and elaborate what he means.
It doesn't feel like a mission just yet.
Yeah.
Right.
So he says, Jason Segel's mission was to forget Sarah Marshall for his own good. Quite frankly, I don't think that's possible. And I agree. Concur. Mm. How could you forget Kristen Bell?
Mila Kunis, Mila Kunis, Mila Kunis.
Kristen Bell, yeah. Kristen Bell, Kristen Bell.
Look, Kristen Bell is cute and everything, but in that movie in particular, like, mm-hmm. I wanted to buy a ring. I wanted to buy flowers. I was going to write songs and sonnets to Mila Kunis' smile in that stupid movie. I mean, she's pretty phenomenal.
She is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, Kristen Bell's great. And she's hysterical and she's funny. Mila Kunis just will melt every icy cold part of my heart there is.
In that movie, I agree.
Yeah, Kristen Bell wasn't the nicest in that one.
It doesn't matter about that. Sure. I just thought Mila Kunis was...
Ugh, that was creepy. You also kind of sounded like like Chewbacca or something, like Chewie having an orgasm or something weird.
I don't know what that sounds like.
Well, now, now you do.
Oh, boy.
So anyway.
Is that it?
Yep.
All right, John, you're up.
All right, so a new name in the group actually posted something, and I really wanted to jump on this one to call it out. So Barbara Harris mentions Weekend at Bernie's. No one suspects there's anything wrong with Bernie the entire weekend.
That's a good point.
A really good point. Like, the whole time, like, there's something wrong with this guy, right? I mean, he's starting to smell.
For people that haven't seen it, because that is an old movie, it's where a guy dies, and they try to pretend like he's alive by carrying him around town. And dressing him up. It's the weirdest, most morbid story, but I dig it. It's funny.
Yeah. So Kyle Nolan brings up a movie that I haven't thought about. Actually, I think about this every time we talk about errands and bees, because it's a movie called Pure Luck. It's from the 1991. It stars Danny Glover and Martin Short, I believe. Yeah, Martin Short. Mm-hmm. Yep, and sure. What he says is the idea that you would hire someone with bad luck in order to find a missing person with the same sort of bad luck is just as absurd and would never work in real life. But the movie is a lot of fun. And he's right. The movie is great. And again, I think whenever I hear about Aaron and bees, I think about Martin Short sitting in the back of that helicopter, like all bloated up from a bee sting. Yeah, I'm fine.
That's fair. That's true.
And then we have a final comment from me from Adam Schraber. Stealing the Declaration of Independence and National Treasure. Yeah, that's a little bit nuts.
Okay. That one, impossible. I can't see any way, especially the way that happens, yeah. Was insanely ridiculous.
I see myself as more of a history protector.
What the world just happened?
That was a really good Nicolas Cage. Can you make a comment like, I'll do anything for money?
No.
No, it's true, though. You don't do Nick Cage voices as facts?
No. I don't.
I only do lies. Movie lies. That's all I do. All right, we got three quick ones. Nate Bruce, the rescue mission of the missionaries with only six mercenaries against the Burmese army in Rambo. Yeah, that's a really good one. But it's Rambo. Mm-hmm. So
it's Rambo.
He always wins. Mm-hmm. Dan Branson, The Core. God, that's a bad movie. Drilling thousands of miles to the center of the earth to detonate nuclear bombs to get it spinning again. Kind of hard to believe, but fun to watch. I'll agree with half of that. I did not like that movie. You did like it? Are you a Core fan?
No, I'm kind of torn on that movie. Like I enjoyed Hilary Swank in that movie, and I enjoyed some of the other casts, and then I would just get distracted by, what was the actor's name in that?
Aaron Eckhart.
Yes, I get distracted by his chin.
Because it's got such a deep butt groove in it?
Yeah, like it's like where is that, a poo hole? What is that?
Is that a poo hole? All right. So Leslie, and this is the one I was going to pick, but since Scott Calliero mentioned it, I thought I'd just let him have it. The actual Finding of Private Ryan. This would have been my Lord of the Rings replacement, but I just came up with something else. To find one paratrooper lost in hundreds of square miles of France, nowhere near where he is supposed to be in the middle of war, is an insane premise. No radio contact, no phones or GPS locators, no vehicle transport, and yet they found him in 2 days. Can't agree more. That is ridiculous, and I don't care, because it's such an emotional powerhouse, and I cry every time at the end, because he stays, because these are his brothers now. What would my brothers think of me? What would my mom think of me if I just left?
Why is your voice getting raspier and
raspier? Because that's how Matt Damon would talk right now.
Is it?
Because he's old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. I'll pass that information along.
No, I'm is not it
because
sure.
like the wind is different here?
Then it is where he's at.
Just gonna squeeze this turnip until there's nothing left. Just nothing left. She brings science, and John's like, "I'm not gonna let that science go." Wind.
You all sound right. So like you sound like Doctor Evil.
Very
no,
proud,
he was like, I couldn't do it like he did.
You sound like you had a stroke. So good job. All right, well, that's our topic. Let's go ahead and jump into recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about. Manna, you saw one that one of our listeners, I think Ginger on YouTube, asked us to check out, The Bleeding Edge, right? What is The Bleeding Edge?
Sure did. So The Bleeding Edge
is on Netflix, right?
Yes, it's a Netflix documentary, and it's really messed up, guys. Like super messed up. It is going through basically how lenient the FDA is on implant devices for surgeries.
What kind of implant device are we
doing? So they go through a few different ones. So the first one that they talk about is called Esure, which is a birth control implant where it has these metal coils that actually close your tubes. It actually makes your skin scar enough.
This just sounds
that it
painful.
But then they can't remove it without actually taking it. Like, particles will end up staying around inside your body and it'll float around because the fragments will. You can't actually pull it out. They taught them how to implant them, but never taught them how to remove them safely.
Oh, my God.
So as it progresses, the stories get deeper and deeper. They do one that's about a hip replacement surgery and how the ones with cobalt in them can cause a lot of problems. And by a lot of problems, I mean a lot of problems. And then they talk about another one. And towards the end, there's a device that literally made a woman's colon come out through her vagina.
That sounds like a problem.
Bad problem. And these are like, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people that are dealing with this because there was this regulation that went into place, which is called 510K or something, 510K. I don't know how you would legally pronounced or whatever, but it's basically where it says, if there is a device that was already pre-approved and it's similar to that device, the one you're trying to get passed through, good, you've got a gold star.
Hmm. That sounds like our government.
Sounds real safe, right? Yeah. And a lot of them are being tested on such small amount of people that it's not, I mean, it's not accurate. None of the results are accurate then. Like one of the devices is a lifelong implant for women and they tested it for 12 months.
For birth control or?
Yeah.
Why don't they just spend time with a child? That should be good enough.
So
I'm kidding.
That's true.
Kind of.
But so there's all of these different ones that they go through and they get really in depth with it. And they talk about, I don't want to say that they talk about our current political climate, but they do talk about some regulations that are being put into place now. So you do get to learn not only the history of this, but also where we're actually at right now. So if you're curious about any of that, it's really, really interesting, but it's also very terrifying. If you're having surgery, don't watch it right now.
Watch it as soon as you're done.
Or maybe do and make sure that you're not getting a cobalt hip, I guess. Warning.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. Wow. All right. So that's the bleeding edge. That is one I will probably have to watch in a very uncomfortable way.
Yeah.
Ew. All right, John, what about you? Did you see anything brighter?
You know what? Speaking of brighter, I did watch a lot of stuff, but all on the same subject. I decided that I really need to refill the Doctor Who hole in my life because I had kind of left it alone for a few years when Peter Capaldi came back on board. And I caught up with the series because I want to be ready for the new Doctor. And I'm glad I did because, I mean, I've got, you know, there's not enough good things you can say about Doctor Who. With the exception of, I finally picked up on the pacing on how these seasons work. The first season with the Doctor is always, hey, we're going to do some cutesy fun stuff to make you really like this person. And then the next season is, we're going to have some mini movies that really, like, scare you because you're going to, they're all coming to a point at the very end of the season, which is going to make you cry. And then they get to, now you're crying, but it's okay. It's happy tears. And then they get into, now it's time to start winding down with this Doctor. And it's interesting to see how they kind of do everything, but such a smart show, so much fun, and it has so much hope. And if you aren't watching it, get started. It's good for you.
All right. I really haven't been watching anything except Hawaii Five-O, Castle Rock, and Mission Impossible movies. So that's all I got. And Amanda, you've got an email before we head out, correct?
I do. So fellow Ho listener Jared Burnett decided to send an email to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com in case you're interested in doing the same. And he says, hey guys, I just wanted to ask, what would you think about Chris Pine in WW84, which is the new Wonder Woman movie, being the Martian Manhunter shape-shifting as Steve Trevor, or he was brought back to life by Dr. Fate? I would love to hear your feedback. So guys, what do you think about that? John, you might have some feelings.
Well, this is actually the first time I've heard Dr. Fate being brought up on the subject. And Mark Bernardin, who does Fat Man on Batman with Kevin Smith, has been talking about the fact that Martian Manhunter, this is a great way to be introducing us to Martian Manhunter, which for those who don't know, he's pretty much what he sounds like. He's a Martian who's the last of his kind. And if you can be introduced to him by watching Supergirl, because he shows up there a lot and he helps people. He does have the ability of shape-shifting, and I think if that's how they're bringing back Chris Pine, which I sort of am hoping for that, then that's actually an interesting way to bring in another new character into the Justice League, because they did hint at more superheroes coming that are newer than the ones that we were introduced to in the Justice League movie. So I like the idea of Matt Martian Manhunter. However, I'm probably going to say that that they're probably not going to do anything that fantastical with it. And it's going to be something either it's a memory ghost kind of thing where she's doing something and she sees his shadow in places and it's kind of like her way of working through issues, or B, maybe it's a long lost line of Steve Trevor's and like she found one of the ones that just happened to be put back together in exactly the same way Chris Pine was.
Oh, that's interesting.
What do you think, Aaron?
I'll kind of follow suit with John, mostly because John knows more about this than I do. I don't know how they're going to bring him back, and I'll be perfectly honest, I'm trying to not think too hard about it, because I want to be surprised, and I can't imagine they're going to bring him back to life in any way, shape, or form. I think it'll just be flashbacks. That's what I think.
Yeah, I'm with you as well with that.
Yeah.
What John was explaining, though, that would be really interesting.
It would be very cool. Yeah. I don't know enough about that world to really speak to it.
For sure.
Yeah.
So I kind of just go, John's right.
Well, let's not say that yet. I mean, let's wait till next year when the movie's coming out. And like you guys did in the Comic-Con episode where I mentioned Shazam, you know. Let's wait until that happens.
You're obviously, you heard that you're right about something, and you're going to milk that for everything it's worth.
Right. So I forgot my point because I was told I was right about something again.
Yeah. Well, here, I'm going to bring everything in this episode full circle, okay? Just to bring it all together so we can end on a positive note.
All right.
Tom Cruise didn't know about internet porn until he met Seth Rogen. Found that out. It was on an article just recently. So now we have it all full circle. Tom Cruise didn't know about internet porn until he met Seth Rogen. Apparently the most corruptible person in Hollywood.
Are you making fun of me or is that a real story?
That's a real story. It's a real story. I'm just letting you know. You are correct. Seth Rogen is the devil.
Son of a bitch.
He's fun as hell. I don't know which one, but it's one of those two, whichever side you lean on.
I'm going to go with fun. He sounds fun.
Yeah. I mean, he gets high and watches porn all day. What's wrong with that?
He works.
He could. He's probably fun.
He probably has so many food particles in that beard. All right. So let's go ahead and wrap the show up. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. We're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Remember to grab the Ho and the Go with our Android app. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or at TheHollywoodOutsider.com, your podcast app of choice, of course. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on Smirk, and me on my other podcast, Remake This Movie Right, which is having its final episode next week. So let's just all take a moment of silence for Remake This Movie Right. Beyond Westworld and The Blacklist Exposed. Thank you guys for being here again, Amanda and John.
That was no silence. There was no silence for Remake.
I did it in my head.
Oh, okay.
Because I've already had that moment.
All right.
So everybody else, once this is over, take a moment and just think about Remake This Movie Right. And how if more of you would able to listen to it, it might still be on the air. Just kidding. It did well. Enough.
And it was fun. Very creative. You did a great job with that.
I just recorded the finale. That won't be out for a couple weeks. The final episode is followed by an actual finale. So it's bittersweet, but it'll be good to end on my own terms.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, congrats to your work on that.
Thanks, man.
Man. You're welcome,
good
man.
Good for you.
Hey, you know what? We're equal opportunity. I call everybody man now. Everybody's a man, except John, because he's obviously, not. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. So remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.